How did you carry me for 15 miles?
Why do you think I did?
Megan was getting tired of him putting her off, and she didn't like the fact that she couldn't remember anything. Besides, it was about time she hit the road. She shoved the rest of the onion ring in her mouth and pushed the baskets toward him. I'm done eating.
That's it?
He asked, sounding surprised but also relieved. He pulled the baskets closer to himself. Seeing them slide away gave Megan a shot of dread, and she reached forward with her fork and stabbed one more cheese curd, shoving it into her mouth. Now I'm done. He chuckled. It wasn't the same as his earlier laugh, but it still sounded nice. It made her feel nice, deep in her belly. And this was a very bad thing. She knew better than to let herself go soft and liquid under the gaze of a handsome man. She'd been burned one too many times before. And here she was again. Way to go, Megan. She watched him eat. He gulped it down like he was the one who hadn't eaten all day. He also didn't talk through his meal. When he was done, meaning when there was nothing left but crumbs, he pushed the empty baskets to the side, wiped his hands on a paper napkin, and took a gulp of whiskey. Now, he said, as if it was finally time to get to the point, there's something I want to discuss with you.
So you've said.
I'm an investigator, or maybe more of a... He looked like he was searching for the right word. Then he tipped his finger at her. Bounty hunter. Megan scrutinized his hopeful expression. And who are you looking for? He stared into her eyes for a while. Then he glanced away.
That's just it. I don't know. Not exactly, anyway.
She turned her head and gave him a side eye.
That must make it pretty difficult.
It is. I've been hunting for a long time.
Why don't you give up?
Because I can't afford to give up. Too much is at risk, and I owe too many people.
You mean like money?
No, not money. Lives. Lives like the one that was lost in that tree in the woods.
The one that... The...
She felt all the blood drain from her face. You didn't hallucinate that. He kept his voice low in a way she felt certain was designed to keep her calm. It wasn't working.
I saw a real dead body?
You saw a really dead, really mutilated body. Your brain is working just fine. You're not crazy, and you're not accidentally on drugs.
Megan took a drink, wondering if maybe she should have got that whiskey after all.
As she lowered the glass to the table, her hand shook so badly the ice cubes clattered.
Okay, she thought. Deep breath. Nothing worse than anything I've seen on TV, right?
But then a prickling sensation crawled over her shoulders because if she hadn't hallucinated the body in the tree, then she hadn't. She lifted her wide eyes to Cormac's narrowed ones.
What?
He asked.
Nothing,
she answered quickly.
So the dead body was real. That didn't mean she really saw all the other things she thought she saw in the woods. Namely, this handsome man turning into an enormous, snarling dog.
And there was no way in hell she was going to suggest that to him. He'd probably think she was on drugs. He'd excuse himself for the men's room and take off, leaving her with the check.
Time to go, she said, quickly turning her body to slide out of the booth.
She wasn't quick enough. She didn't know how he did it, but in a flash, Cormac was on her, standing beside the edge of her seat and blocking her escape.
What's your hurry?
She looked up at him, and her heart clenched. Not with fear, exactly. Probably because there had always been something not quite right with her. But with annoyance and a definite rush of adrenaline. He placed one hand on the table, one hand on the back of the booth.
Don't worry.
I'm not worried, she said, though her heart pounded so hard against her sternum she swore the whole room could hear it.
You are. But I promise, I won't touch you.
Megan lifted her chin, inhaled, then said with as much menace as she could muster,
I'd like to see you try.
One side of Cormac's mouth pulled up in a smile. Is that intended as a threat or an invitation?
What do you think?
She snapped.
A threat,
he said, not losing the smile. And it's noted. He
drew in a long breath, then released it just as slowly. There's still something I want to discuss with you. He tipped his head toward the booth, silently asking if she'd let him sit beside her. What more could there be to say? He was a bounty hunter searching for a madman who left mutilated corpses in the woods. That was enough for her. She didn't need to hear anything more. And yet she gave him a jerky nod and slid toward the wall, giving him room to sit. His body seemed to relax, and he slipped onto the seat beside her, watching her carefully with gleaming eyes. Damn. There was just so much heat coming off him. Seriously. Despite the serious fucked-upness of the situation, it was all Megan could do not to burrow into that heat, especially remembering how she'd done so as he carried her down the hill. That body we saw today was not the first I've encountered. There's a serial killer on the North Shore, and I mean to take him down. Thought maybe you could help. What? I'm not following, she said, which might have something to do with the fact his hard thigh was pressed up against hers. I thought you said you were a bounty hunter, not law enforcement. He grimaced. I've branched out. So what do you say? I've wanted an assistant for a while. You seem to be in need of a job. Megan's head jerked back. He was right about the last part, but as for the first, he had to be lying. Even if he'd needed an assistant for a while, she doubted he'd actually want one. You could help me take notes, speak to witnesses. She studied his face for a second, then rolled her lips inward. Clearly, she wasn't the crazy one. He was. Okay, I can tell by the look on your face that this is a shock, but believe me, the fact I'm suggesting this is as big of a surprise to me as it is to you. I seriously doubt that, she said. There was something he wasn't telling her. Why me? Why not you? Don't jerk me around. I told you I'm not in school. I've got no special skills, no training. What's really going on? All right. He said slowly, obviously thinking. But whether he was deciding to tell her the real reason or to make one up on the fly, she couldn't tell. I'd like you to help me because you're not from here. I'm not from anywhere, she thought. You can move around without notice. I would think if I'm a stranger, I'd be more noticed. No, to the people around here, you're inconsequential. Well, doesn't that put a mighty fine point on it? She wondered if, at the end of the day, Cormac would think she was expendable, too. So what do you think? Stay with me a little longer? No, she said, and it about killed her to say it. To think she, Megan Walsh, could be trusted with such an important job, the idea was nearly as intoxicating as the whiskey she'd refused. But she wasn't about to set herself up for that kind of disappointment. Ultimately, he'd realize his mistake. Ultimately, she'd fail him. Rejection from a regular man was one thing and barely registered. Rejection from someone like Cormac? She didn't know why, not yet. But she knew deep in her soul that it would be different. No? He asked. No, Mac, she said, this time more firmly. His lips curled up. Why not? How many reasons do you need? How many do you got? He asked. Let's start with three. First, trekking all over wherever the hell in search of a serial killer. God, listen to her. Was she seriously using these words like she was talking about the weather? Is a tad bit out of my wheelhouse. I realize that. His lips quirked into an amused smile that was so beautiful she had to pause before launching into number two. Second, it's not exactly the fresh start I was after. Not that she had anything particular in mind. She was the queen of fresh starts. They were just your average Monday. Now his face got more serious. I understand. She made a pfft sound because there was no way he could understand. Third, I've got somewhere to be. Where's that? Canada. And what will you do when you get there? To this, she had no answer. And where will you stay? Still no answer. Damn, Cormac's gaze dropped to her lips, and his Adam's apple bobbed. He took a drink. A gulp, really, as if the whiskey was nothing more than water. Megan watched the corded muscles of his throat as he swallowed. Then she sighed. I guess that about sums it up, then. I think it's best if I go. Work with me and you'll have a place to stay, he said quickly. What? A roof, food. We'd be moving around a lot, but if you helped me, you'd have a place to stay, free of charge. Give it at least a week. Megan put her right hand on the table to steady herself. His insinuation from before had been correct. She had nothing useful in her suitcase, and she only had $47.50 in her wallet. She could make money, though. Ever since leaving home, she'd always found a way. Usually that came from sketching caricatures of people on the sidewalk for $5. After covering the cost of paper and pencils, she'd net enough for a couple of meals. But it would be good not to have to hustle. A break from all that, even if just for a short while, would ease her mind. Shelter. Food. A flushing toilet that she could use without having to buy something first. These were good things. It didn't hurt that the handsome stranger offering them to her was looking at her earnestly. Definitely not. Okay, she said. I'll give you 2 days, and then we'll see. Really? He asked, his eyebrows rising. He put his own hand on the table and their fingertips were nearly touching. Don't ask again. I'm likely to change my mind. He smiled. Then he did the weirdest thing. He leaned in, lifted her wrist to his nose and inhaled deeply. Then, weirder still, he kissed the top of her head. It was strange, but it was also nice. Sweet and kind. As far back as she could remember, no one had ever done that before. Certainly not her aunt and uncle. Cormac's lips started to pull into an embarrassed smile, as if he too couldn't quite believe he'd done it. He covered his obvious discomfort by saying, "Give me your phone." She slid it toward him, and he quickly put in his number. Then he called himself and added her to his contacts. Just as he handed back her phone, the door opened and a shaft of early evening light broke across the floor. Cormac turned his head to look around the corner of the booth, and Megan felt his body stiffen. She couldn't tell what had him reacting so strangely, until a young girl crossed the room and came into Megan's own field of vision. She looked too young to be in a bar. Her childlike face was curtained by long but surprisingly snowy white hair. She walked straight for a bar stool, climbed up on top, then swiveled around to level her amber eyes at Megan. "Banshee," Cormac growled. Megan's eyes jerked to him. Did he say Banshee? Was that girl's name? Did her mother hate her or something? Do you know her? No, he growled. Then his hand crashed down on hers. Megan gave a yelp as electricity zinged through her. She tried to pull her hand back, but his grip was too tight. After the shock came a strange, warm feeling that made her bones feel as though they'd all gone liquid. She felt herself slump forward, but more like she was watching herself from the outside. And then it was as though the world tilted and she was sucked into a long tunnel. Her head spun and her limbs felt stretched, nearly to the point of dislocation. Sound distorted. Lights flashed. Then there was nothing but wind. And then there was nothing at all.
Chapter 6. Cormac. 1 hour later. Megan Wall still hadn't woken up. Cormac paced the room and periodically punched the wall. He couldn't believe what he'd done to her. He'd panicked when he saw the Banshee, then acted rashly and tilted Megan out of the bar. What on earth made him think it was a good idea to transport a pawdry that way? The Banshee. The herald of death. Aye, clearly. She was the reason. Still, human beings were not she. Their bodies were three-dimensional and not designed for the fourth. To tilt Megan through space like that, there was no excuse for his overreaction. The Banshee must have entered the bar with someone else on her mind. Poor bastard. Obviously, there had been no threat against his own life. He was still standing, and though her pulse was weak, it looked like Megan might live as well. Hopefully. If only she'd wake up. It killed him that he could have her in his bed. Yet still she wasn't safe. And that was all his fault. Gently, he swept the flannel shirt off Megan's shoulder, exposing her neck, as he pressed his thumb to her carotid and felt once more for a pulse. There. Just there. He could feel it more certainly now, though it was still weak. He tipped his head to the side and laid his ear to her mouth. Air was moving. It was shallow, but it was moving. "That's it, Makushla," he said encouragingly. "In, then out. You can do it." He removed her flannel shirt and then her jeans, but only to make her more comfortable. He didn't look at her body as he did so. This was not the time, and it was the furthest thing from his mind. Carefully, he tucked the blankets around her. Then he sat in the corner of the room and waited. Waited for redemption. Waited for the inevitable. Only time would tell. It wasn't the first time Cormac had seen a banshee, then waited silently, watching fate have its way with someone and being unable to help. When Megan's head lolled to the side and her lips parted, it brought his dark memories into even clearer focus. He'd only been 15. His younger brothers, 11, 10, and 5, when he was roused from sleep by the creaking scrape of his bedroom window opening. The wind howled outside and rain rushed in, splattering the floor. He sat up in surprise and saw what seemed to be a child sitting on the windowsill, her long white hair wet and sticking to her face. She didn't speak, only looked at him with her amber eyes. He might have died of fright had she not been followed by a small black rabbit. Cormac didn't have time to wonder how a child and a rabbit were on the ledge of his second-story window, because the rabbit began to speak with a trembling voice. "Get up. Get your brothers from their rooms, and quickly." He hadn't asked why or what she meant. He just did what he was told, and three more sleepy heads lifted from their pillows. His brothers, Declan, Aidan, and Madigan. The banshee disappeared as if on a gust of wind, but the rabbit hopped toward the wardrobe. Cormac understood that he was meant to usher his brothers inside. He would have, too, but at that moment he heard their father's angry voice from the kitchen downstairs. Their parents were arguing. His mother sounded frantic. "This way," Cormac said, leading them toward the stairs. Declan, Aidan, and Madigan followed, just as they always did. "No," said the rabbit. "Hide yourselves in the wardrobe. Don't delay." Cormac felt the rabbit's panic deep in his heart, but he didn't return to the bedroom. Instead, he snuck his brothers downstairs and quietly pushed them into the cupboard in the hall. From there, they could listen to their parents in the kitchen. Plus, there were gaps and holes in the paneling from which they could spy. "There were nearly 200 gathered at the fairy ring," his father said, sounding furious.
200?
His mother gasped.
"What brought them out?"
The brothers jostled quietly in the cupboard, trying to get a glimpse of their parents. But they only got bits and pieces. An elbow, a whirl of skirts, or a clenched fist.
"The Black Castle,"
their father said, and Cormac got a quick view of a piece of paper in his hand.
"Here?"
his mother asked, sounding incredulous.
"They followed us here?"
"Aye, Siobhan. Are the lads asleep?"
"Yes, but Conan, what does this mean?"
Before his father could answer, there was a knock at the kitchen door. In his rage, his father threw it open.
"What is the meaning of this? The hour is left."
But he never finished his rebuke. There was the sound of heavy boots. More than one pair. 3? 5? His parents were both cushy, fierce, and nothing to trifle with. But they'd been taken off guard, duped by the false security of their own home. Judging by the ghastly sound that followed, their father was the first to fall. Cormac clapped his hand over Madigan's mouth so he wouldn't cry out and give them all away. From behind him, he could feel his other brothers trembling. Their mother went next. Cormac watched through a crack as her head separated from her neck and tumbled to the floor, her body following, but more slowly, collapsing first at the knees and then falling forward, arms hanging limp and not catching her fall. With her death, the anguish welled up inside him. Then came the horrified realization that he had done nothing to stop it. Within seconds, the guilt overwhelmed him. And then came the seething hatred. Hatred for those responsible. Hatred for himself. Cushy do not cower in a cupboard. But that's exactly what he had done. Through another crack, he saw a black cloak. Then another.
"Search the house," came the order.
It was the voice of a stranger.
"They may have children, or boarders."
Madigan stiffened in Cormac's arms, and his other brothers curled their fingers into the back of his nightshirt. The boots ran down the hall, then pounded up the stairs. He knew what they'd find. 4 unmade beds. Clothes on the floor, 1 window open. Would they assume he and his brothers had escaped? By Danu. He hoped so. But even after the last attacker left, he could not bring himself to leave the cupboard. In the end, he didn't know how long he and his brothers remained hidden, only that it had been long enough for the air to go stale with breath and tears. How Cormac wished he could go back, do it differently. But he couldn't change anything now. He couldn't rush in to save the parents who were already dead, their blood pooled and cooling around their lifeless bodies. It was all his fault. His brothers didn't have to utter a word to tell him that they wholeheartedly agreed. It might have been minutes. It might have been hours before he found the courage to open the cupboard door. The cooler air flooded in, tinged with the scent of copper. Madigan rushed forward first, too young to fully understand.
"Mom! Mummy!"
He lifted their mother's hand and held it in his lap, crying.
"Wake up! Wake up!"
Declan vomited in the corner of the room. Aidan stood, ramrod straight, his eyes wide with horror, his body paralyzed with shock. Cormac went to the piece of paper that had angered his father. It was still soaked with rain and had gotten nearly transparent, its corners torn off. He tried to read what it said, but he failed at that too. This was more forgivable. It was written in English, a language he had not yet learned. The only thing he recognized were the symbols at the bottom, a bright green shamrock crossed by a sword. He didn't know what the images meant, but he knew he'd hate them forever. He glanced over at Declan and Aidan with tears thick in his eyes. His brothers stood flattened against the kitchen wall, their faces grey. They said nothing, but Cormac knew their thoughts. He was useless, cowardly. A disappointment to them all. A shame on the family. He'd hid in the cupboard, and now their family was broken. They'd lost everything. Even the living were lost, and Cormac most of all. His head jerked up. Megan's breath was now audibly moving in and out of her lungs. Her chest rose and fell with the more encouraging rhythm, and the sight was enough to tear Cormac from the nightmares of his past. Now in the darkness, he couldn't see her curls as they splayed across the pillow, but he still knew she was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. And not just among Podricks. She could rival any she as well. "Ours," the hound said as it prowled inside him, grumbling and impatient. It didn't understand what Cormac was waiting for, and it was going to have to keep on not understanding, because Cormac would wait forever. He could resist her pull. He had to. And if there was one thing he'd had sufficient practice at, it was not getting what he wanted. He gazed down at her and, without thinking, stroked his finger across her bottom lip, pulling it as he did. It was plump, soft, and pink. Perfect. Her heady, exhilarating scent sang in his bloodstream. By Danu, she was tempting. "Ours," said the hound, whining now. "I he answered. But that fact was of no consequence. It didn't matter what fate had in store. Megan Walsh could not fix his past. She could not fix him. The best she could do was help him find his vengeance. And then, when that was over, he'd say goodbye. Because even when the score was settled, all that would be left was him. And he would never be enough.
Chapter 7. Megan. 20 hours later. Megan! Megan jerked in response. She was having the dream about the woman again, and though the woman's back was still turned, this time she spoke. Megan! The voice was hollow and distant, but still somehow familiar. Megan whimpered in response. Megan! The woman called again, and this time she yanked Megan out of her sleep before she was really ready. Perhaps that was why she woke feeling immobile and unable to open her eyes. Everything felt fuzzy, but there was one thing she knew for sure. She was alone. She wasn't afraid. Alone was Megan's middle name. Well, not really, it was Marie. But she wouldn't be surprised if someday her tombstone read, Megan Marie Walsh, she died alone. Because it wasn't just her father and the northbound traveling douchebag who'd left her. Being on the road for 3 years, she'd sought protection from several loser guys before wiping her hands clean of men in general. In the end, they all took something from her. The best of them only took her pride. The worst, her money. Slowly, she forced her thoughts to focus on her current predicament. Okay, do not freak. First step upon waking up in a strange place, assess your surroundings. She was still too out of it to open her eyes, but she flexed her hands and curled them into a warm blanket. She was in a bed. And, judging by the fact she could hear waves, somewhere near a lake. Second step. What was the last thing you remember? A bar. A crazy job offer. A gorgeous man. Mac! Did he bring me here? There was no other explanation. Plus, she inhaled. The whole room smelled of him. But how? She had no memory of being carried or getting into a car, but she didn't think she'd been roofied. Not only had she not left her drink unattended, she didn't take Cormac for the type. So what happened? Megan took another assessment, this time of her body. She could feel the elastic of her panties creeping up her ass, but no denim on her legs. She could feel the clasp of her bra pressed against her spine, and the silkiness of her camisole against her belly, but nothing on her arms. She didn't feel sore or sticky. Something terrible occurred to her, and she gasped. Where's my suitcase? My treasures? Megan, asked a deep and familiar voice. Christ, are you awake? Her eyes opened just in time to see Cormac's large body move swiftly toward her, and in her periphery, whitewashed walls and a low ceiling supported by rough-hewn beams. Thank Danu, he exclaimed. You're alive. When he reached her, his warm head slid against the side of her neck, and his mouth crashed down on hers. Holy! He was kissing her. Megan was so surprised, it took a second before she reacted to the heat of his body. Not to mention the hungry urgency of his lips. It only took a moment more for her body to coil in delicious ways, apparently recognizing what it had wanted since the first time she saw him. Her back arched into him, and her physical reaction to his kiss drew a small moan of pleasure from his throat. But then, it was as if that very sound broke the spell. Cormac jerked back, his eyes huge. Shit, he rasped. Then he pulled back another inch. Oh, shit. I'm so sorry. That was stupid of me. I wasn't thinking. I just... Megan. Megan's whole body hummed with the tingling after effects. She was so turned on. She thought she could live in that kiss for the rest of her life and be happy. But she knew there was no way she would ever admit that to him, particularly since he seemed to be regretting it already. There was no helping her physical attraction to him, but she didn't need him to know. As soon as a good-looking man knew he had you hooked, he took all the power. He'd use it against her. So she guarded her heart.
What the hell was that?
She asked, unfortunately still finding it hard to catch her breath. Even now, just thinking about his strong arms and broad chest put a chink in her self-control.
Fuck, I'm so sorry, he said, but his hand remained at her neck.
Don't kiss me again. She didn't mean that either. She wanted him to kiss her again, and then again, and again, and again. But she knew better. His one kiss was destructive enough. She'd remember it forever. It would be the measuring stick for every future kiss she ever had. Damn him.
I won't, I promise. I'm so sorry. It's just that...
He quieted for a second and pressed his thumb against her pulse. Then he pinched his lips together and dropped his head forward in relief.
Well, I guess you're made of sturdier stock than most.
She tried to sit up, but he lifted his head and pressed her down.
Don't move. You're merely conscious, still not ready to be vertical.
Why? What did you do to me? She whispered, her own lungs stripped for air. Obviously, he hadn't stolen her stuff, because what kind of thief stuck around? He blinked once.
You don't remember?
She closed her eyes and exhaled. She was remembering more now. The strange girl, his oddly intense reaction to her, the twisting, tilting sensation of being pulled through a dark tunnel, but then, nothing.
Where am I?
She checked the clock on the bedside table. 5 o'clock. She'd lost an entire day. A lakeside resort. I've been renting a cottage. How did I get here? He bowed his head for a second, then lifted it again.
I don't know what I was thinking, tilting you like that.
Tilting me like that? He checked her eyes, then pressed his thumb against the inside of her wrist.
I couldn't even find your pulse at first, I thought. Sweet Daniel, I thought.
Cormac's eyes drifted over her face, then settled on her lips. She opened her mouth to speak, but he leaned even closer and said,
It's noon, but rest a little longer. Then get dressed. Your clothes are in your suitcase. I'll meet you in the other room and then we'll talk.
More talk. Megan wasn't sure she was up for any more talk.
Take your time, he said. Come out when you're ready.
Megan sighed and he strode out of the room, closing the bedroom door softly behind him. Immediately, she flung back the blanket and sat up. She paused to make sure her blood was circulating. Then she crossed the floor and found her suitcase. The clothes she was wearing yesterday were folded neatly on top, just like he said. She flipped the latches on her suitcase and started digging around inside, taking inventory. Everything was there. The snow globe she got in Minneapolis, the menu from Papagino's Pizzeria in Kansas City, the hot dog keychain from Chicago. She knew it was all a bunch of junk. She definitely knew that. But they were treasures to her. Each one marked a moment in her life, and she needed those mementos when so many other markers from her past were missing. Relieved, she pulled on her jeans and flannel shirt, refusing to think about how they'd come off without her knowing, then opened the other inner door that led out of the room, hoping to find a bathroom. Victory! She caught sight of herself in the mirror.
Whoa, serious bedhead.
Then took care of business, washed her hands, and brushed her teeth. On a spontaneous afterthought, she opened the medicine cabinet. There was only a toothbrush and toothpaste, the whitening kind, and deodorant. Of more significance, no perfume, lotion, or lipstick anywhere to be seen. She closed the cabinet, swept her hands over her hair, then exited the bedroom through the door where Cormac had gone. She stopped immediately. He was sitting across the room in a wooden rocking chair beside a floor-to-ceiling stone fireplace. His expression was grim. In the corner to her left, there was a small kitchenette, a rectangular table and two chairs. Other than that, the room was completely bare. There was a square window beside the front door to her right. The ceiling, like the one in the bedroom, was low and beamed. She sucked in a breath and planted her hands on her hips. Cormac looked unhappy, or maybe like he hadn't slept. Was this talk going to be him telling her he'd had second thoughts and that he was withdrawing his offer? Probably. Megan steeled her body against the inevitable and told herself not to care. especially since he still hadn't explained what happened last night. But damn, it did not feel good. Not in the slightest. So now what? She could do what she normally did and tell him she was leaving before he had the chance to tell her to go. Or she could swallow her pride and beg him to give her a chance. If she could be of some help to him, she could get a couple more good night's sleep before having to hit the road again. "You're feeling all right, then?" he asked. "All right." He nodded, but not like he truly believed her. "So," he jerked his head toward one of the kitchen chairs. "Pull it up. Have a seat." Megan glanced over at the chair and then toward the fireplace. Despite his invitation, she stayed standing. Cormac exhaled and said, "What happened last night was my fault." Megan rolled her eyes, thinking, "Here we go." She didn't know exactly what happened last night, but given she was dealing with a bounty hunter who was tracking some kind of sadist, she bet his story was going to be a doozy. "Trouble follows me," he said, getting to his feet. The rocking chair swayed behind him, creaking against the floorboards as he walked toward her. "More than most, it seems. There's more about me I should have told you." Megan found this hard to believe, mostly because how much more could there be? What she already knew of him made her head spin. "And when I'm done telling you," he continued, glancing away, "I'll understand if you want to go." Megan sucked in a breath. Apparently, she was about to get the Cormac McConnell version of the "it's not you, it's me" speech. Well, it was good it was happening now, because what if she let herself get used to having dinner with him? Waking with him? What if he did more than kiss her? Damn. What had she been thinking getting caught up with this guy? What if she eventually settled in, thought of this cottage as a real home and not just a place to crash for a few days? What if they started talking about their hopes and dreams and giving back rubs by the fire after a long day of bounty hunting? What if she, like, really fell for him? She held her hands up before he said anything more. "No worries, I get it. You're scraping me off." She hoped her flat, matter-of-fact tone would suggest it was no skin off her nose. Her mind instinctively went to her wallet. She might have enough for one night in a shitty motel, but that would be it. Cormac glanced to the side, then back to her. "I wouldn't put it that way. But you'd be smart to leave. I want you to leave, even though I still want your help." That got her attention. "Wait, you still want my help?" "Of course, but I shouldn't risk." "It's no risk," she said on a rush of breath. "I mean, I'm no one to you, right?" "Not really." Cormac folded his arms. "That's not exactly how I'd put it." "You don't know me." He shrugged. "I know you're from Chicago, that you're a good artist and terrible at making fire. What you need to know about me is that I don't have a great track record for keeping people safe." You thought she was a good artist? She filed that away for some other time. "I've lost a lot of people," he said. "My family." Her mouth tightened. "We've all lost people." "No, I mean, if that's your only excuse, Mac, forget about it. I'm alone because I've lost everyone and everything. You're not special." Though he was, wasn't he? Special, that is. As much as Megan wanted to deny it, right down to her core, she knew that Cormac McConnell was different. She also liked his confession. Well, she didn't like to hear it. For his sake, she wished he had a big, fun-loving family to go home to at the end of the day. But it was nice to have something in common between them. She hoped that didn't make her too much of a terrible person to be happy about that. Cormac bit down on his lip. God, he looked sexy doing that. And she liked the way he looked at her, too. She'd keep the memory of that look with her when this was over and he ultimately pushed her out the door. "Just let me try and help you. What if we catch whoever you're hunting? What if we get them before they hurt anyone else?" "You really want to help me?" he asked, sounding surprised. "I told you, I don't have anywhere else to go." Cormac stared at her for a long second, then wrapped his hand around the back of his neck and muttered, "Fuck me." Megan sighed. It was hardly a ringing endorsement of their new partnership, but then what had she expected? The only thing there was to do now was stick close, hopefully be of some use, and maybe get a couple more free meals out of the deal. If all that happened in the presence of a guy so beautiful it scorched her heart just to look at him, well, that was just gravy now, wasn't it? Would it be okay if I... She'd meant to finish the question with, take a shower. It had been 2 days since she was starting to feel self-conscious. But before she could ask, there was a sudden thumping at the door, and they both turned to look. Wait here, Cormac said as he crossed the floor. Megan trailed right behind him. When he opened the door, there was no one there. But then... Megan's gaze dropped to the doorstep, and there, standing up on its hind legs, was the most adorable, long-eared black rabbit she'd ever seen. Oh my gosh, how cute! Cormac slammed the door and turned the lock. Cormac!
What?
Didn't you see the little bunny?
I saw it.
Open the door, it was cute.
It isn't cute. It isn't cute, he yelled.
There was a rapping sound again, and Cormac frowned. Megan looked at him incredulously. Then she exhaled and grabbed the knob, whipping the door open. The rabbit was gone. No surprise there, he'd probably scared the crap out of it. Instead, it was a woman, not much taller than 5 feet, with long, gleaming black hair. Her face was perfectly symmetrical, her skin flawless, her dark brown eyes were flecked with gold, and her lips were full. She was, in a word, stunning. Am I interrupting a private moment? The woman asked, crossing her arms and jutting out one hip.
Puka, Cormac growled. You have very big ears.
And you have a big mouth. Then she turned her head to the side and gave Megan an appraising look. Ah, fuck. Megan had seen that kind of look before, and she kicked herself for not seeing this coming. Of course Cormac McConnell would have a girlfriend, and of course she'd be beautiful.
Chapter 8. Cormac. Cormac exhaled with exasperation. It wasn't like he could slam the door a second time. He had no choice but to make introductions now, and the last thing he needed was for Branna to know he had solicited the help of a Podrick. She was already assessing Megan coolly and, judging by her facial expression, not coming to a favorable conclusion.
So, who's this?
She asked, doing nothing to stop her lip from curling.
No one, Cormac snarled, and he stepped in front of Megan to shield her with his body.
She doesn't seem like no one,
Branna said. Puka, Cormac said, warningly. I don't bite, McConnell. You don't have to hide her.
Megan, stay here, he said, still covering her. Branna and I will take this outside.
No, Megan said. I'll just get my things and...
Stay inside, he barked. And lock up. I've got a key.
Jesus, fine, she clicked.
Then she muttered,
Bossy.
Cormac pushed Branna backwards and out of the doorway, allowing for himself to exit. He turned over his shoulder and told Megan,
This won't take long.
Megan gave Branna her own appraising look, then she closed the door. Cormac waited for the sound of the lock before turning to explain. Before he could speak, Branna said,
You have got to be kidding me.
Why are you here? He asked.
Then he glanced toward the window, expecting to see Megan spying on their conversation, but she wasn't there. Whether that meant she didn't feel threatened, or that she just didn't care, he didn't know. Branna's presence was not a welcome one. She was the only creature besides his brothers who had first-hand knowledge of all he'd lost, and though she had helped prevent his own tragic end, she would be forever emotionally tied to those events. They were civil with each other, usually, but seeing her never felt good. She looked up at him with pity, and that made everything worse.
Don't look at me like that.
He'd rather have her look at him with disdain than with pity. Then he asked again, emphasizing each word.
Why are you here?
She gave him her typical look of superiority. Don't read too much into it, handsome,
It's just a social call.
A social call? He'd never known Branagh to be social, unless that meant saying, "Don't look now, but your family's about to bite it." She sighed and leaned against the side of the cottage.
"Now, Cormac," she said in a sweetly sing-song tone, "if you're not careful, I'm going to start to think you don't like me."
He gave her a withering look, then he tipped his head to the side, indicating he meant for them to walk. She followed. He'd only gone a dozen steps from the cottage when his hands began to shake. Damn. His father had been right about that too. He distracted himself from his separation from Megan by picking a fight with Branagh. "I'm not going to be happy if your presence means someone is getting their head lopped off." He meant Megan, but he was of course also remembering his family. Branagh winced as if the memories hurt her as much as him. Impossible. He looked over his shoulder at the cottage, judging the distance and how quickly he could get back to Megan if he needed to. "Is she in danger?"
"Not at the moment," Branagh said, giving him her back and continuing to stride down the dirt road.
Cormac lunged and stopped her, tugging back on her arm. They'd moved far enough. "Then let's go back to my question. Why are you here?"
"To prove to myself that you hadn't turned me into a liar. Word on the street is you've taken on a business partner, that you've solicited the help of a Padraic. Of course, I told the Sidhe they were mistaken."
"There's been no mistake." He was going to have to be more discreet. Word travelled too fast among his kind.
"I see that. Are you sure it's not a trick? She could be one of them."
Cormac felt a trickle of doubt run through him. He'd never thought of that. And he did find her at the scene of a killing. But he dismissed the thought as quickly as it came. She was too freaked out by the body to have been responsible. "She is not a Black Castle. So you can go now." She sighed.
"I don't know. It might be fun to watch your self-flagellation routine for a while."
"Now what's that supposed to mean?" But he knew what she meant. None of his kind would spend any amount of concentrated time with a Padraic. Not if they could help it, anyway. And that was true in more ways than one.
"What I mean, Cormac, is that you don't do anything unless it makes you miserable."
"Very funny."
"Is it?"
Cormac stared at her for a second, then he shook his head and gave the best explanation he could, given he was still figuring things out for himself. "She's not just any Padraic." It nearly killed him to admit that, even to himself. But there it was. He'd known it from the first time her scent filled his sensitive nose. Now it nearly killed him to be separated from it. Of course, no one had predicted she'd be human. What his dad's stories could not capture was the level of addiction he'd experience. Once his business arrangement with Megan was over, he'd need a solid 12-step program to get over her because there was no way a Padraic could live among the Sidhe.
"What's that supposed to mean?" Branagh asked. "Not just any Padraic."
"Nothing," he said. "She's just different. And I think she can help me find at least one of the Black Castle." She shook her head.
"Don't kid a kidder, Cormac.
It's just a theory so far, but I think it has merit. The only wrinkle, she doesn't know what I am yet, or even why I'm hunting."
She pushed air past her lips, making a little pff sound. "That's going to be a hard secret to keep."
"I know. I already tilted her."
His fingers twitched in agitation at the memory. Branagh's eyes flew open in alarm.
"A Padraic could never survive that."
"She barely did." Branagh glanced back to the cottage, her forehead knit.
"So what's your genius plan? Keep your secret for as long as you can, get the job done, and then what?"
He gave her a sideways glance and narrowed his eyes. "And then, nothing."
She shook her head, then looked up at him in confusion. "We've moved all of 30 feet from that cottage, and I can feel the tension rolling off of you. What's going on?"
Cormac let an audible groan.
Branna had always been good at reading him.
Oh, fuck.
Her eyes went wide.
You're not suggesting...
No, of course not. I told you, she's just helping me.
Whatever you say.
Great, because that's what I'm saying, Cormac snarled. The length of this conversation, short as it was, had him on guard. He'd never talked this much with Branna before. She tended to pop up, deliver her diary messages, then pop right out again, faster than he could say hello.
Love requires courage and faith, my friend. She arched an eyebrow. Are you saying she's too weak?
He gave her an incredulous look.
What the fuck are you talking about?
I don't love her. And I sure as shit don't want her to love me. She's helping me. Period. End of story.
No sooner had the words left his mouth than he glanced back at the cottage. When he looked back, Branna had clearly noticed. You're distracted, she said matter-of-factly. You want to be with her.
He exhaled in exasperation.
I feel responsible for her. That's all.
She folded her arms.
You see? Right there. That will always be your greatest enemy, beyond any maniac Black Castle.
And what's that supposed to mean?
Only that if you want responsibility, there's plenty of it to be had back at home.
Try again.
They'd had this argument in the past. She knew how he felt. He'd made a vow not to return until he'd settled the score. He wasn't any closer to that goal than he'd been 50 years ago, but he wasn't about to quit now.
Branna sighed.
Fine.
Then how about this? If all this Podrick is to you is another responsibility, get rid of her now. Any kind of help she can give you is short-lived.
Short-lived? His eyes narrowed. And the truth slips out. You know about the Banshee from the other night.
Branna folded her arms.
The danger isn't any closer than it was then.
But no farther away either, he added knowingly.
All I meant by short-lived was that she's human. You can't keep her around forever.
Cormac's gut tightened, almost as badly as it did when he'd been trying to find Megan's pulse.
Fuck.
It was wrong of him to impose himself on her life.
He should have let her walk away when she wanted to.
A moment of silence passed between them, and then Branna seemed to concede.
Listen, if you think she can help, no harm trying. Life isn't worth much if you don't take a few risks.
Cormac bit down on his lips. He knew now how much it cost her to say that.
And you'd tell me if it was too much of a risk?
Don't I always?
She asked, going back to her earlier teasing tone.
No, he said grimly. Never.
She shrugged one shoulder. Then, there's your answer. Cormac blinked, and when he opened his eyes, all he saw was that blasted rabbit hopping away.
Chapter 9. Cormac. When Cormac returned to the cottage, he expected to find Megan standing just inside the door, arms crossed, and waiting for answers. That's where he'd be if their roles were reversed and he was waiting for her to return after talking to that guy in her sketchpad. Her scent had permeated the hearth room, but she wasn't in it.
Megan?
He walked into the bedroom, and her scent grew stronger, coming from the blankets and the indentation where she'd slept. He'd pushed down the clench in his gut and scanned the room. Her suitcase was still there, open, but no Megan. No sounds at all. A chill ran through him as his gaze darted to the back door that led from the bedroom to the lakeshore.
She wouldn't leave now, would she? At least not without her stuff.
He turned toward the bathroom. On the other side of its door, the faucet was dripping, as it had been for days, but there was no other sound from within. He tapped his fingers against the door. When there was no answer, he opened it. A wall of steam rolled out, and with it, Megan, whose hand was on the knob. Her body was wrapped in nothing but a towel, and she'd landed hard against his chest. He caught her, one arm wrapped around her waist, the other around her bare shoulders.
The hound in him jumped to its feet while Cormac the man whispered, "Oh, sweet Danu. Oh, Christ." The feel of her warm body pressed against him, so different from when he'd merely carried her.
"Dude,"
she whisper yelled, as if afraid they'd be caught.
"What the hell?"
"Shh," he said. "It's just me." Then he closed his eyes in mortification.
"Just me? Was that supposed to make this all better?"
She slapped her hands against his chest, and he felt her towel loosen and slip just a bit between them.
"Are you crazy?"
She was scolding him, but she still kept her voice low.
"What's your girlfriend going to think if she sees you in here?"
"Girlfriend?" he asked, his eyebrows pulling together.
Hello,
she said, all attitude but still doing nothing to pull away. "The pissed off woman you were just talking to?" He gave his head a little shake.
"Are you being serious?"
"Serious as the grave." She glanced nervously toward the other room.
"Which is where she'll probably put me if she walks in here. They never blame the cheating boyfriend. It's always the chick who takes the hit."
"She's not," he said, fighting a grin. "My girlfriend." Cormac felt Megan's body soften against him, as if in relief.
"Really?"
"Really." He gave up on fighting the grin. Her eyes went a little lazy, and she gave him more of her weight.
"Well, I guess that's good."
Actually, this was bad. She was so much easier to resist when her hackles were raised. Sweet, pink, warm from the shower Megan was too much to handle. By Danu, the feel of her wet skin under his fingertips.
You should get dressed, he said, stepping back.
Her hand rose quickly to snag the slipping towel, and the implication that it could drop so easily made his thighs tense and his shaft harden. His glamoured pants grew tighter. He started breathing through his mouth. "Control, control, control." He scrubbed his palm over his face. Then he looked to the ceiling. Anywhere but at Megan. The hound in him yowled and lunged, but there was no way he'd let it loose. Unfortunately, the hound had never been one for logic, only instinct, and at that moment it was going mad. Worse, it was starting to make some sense. With a desperate growl, Cormac stormed out of the bedroom and shut the door between them. Cormac glanced up from where he was sitting beside the fireplace, then he glanced away. Megan had emerged, now fully dressed in a short black skirt with thick tights, a light blue cotton t-shirt that was fitted to her breasts and slim waist, and a worn cardigan. Her hair left wet marks on her shoulders.
"Sorry about..."
He made a vague gesture in the direction of the bathroom.
"I hope I didn't embarrass you."
"You're going to have to work harder if you're trying to embarrass me." Then she smiled shyly at him, contradicting her words. That smile nearly undid him. It was more alluring than her smart mouth or her ridiculous body, and it was completely unnecessary. He was already fucked when it came to her. She shrugged and walked farther into the room.
"Though you should really knock the next time you open a bathroom door."
"I did knock."
She couldn't think he was so rude, could she? His hound whined pathetically, turning in a circle. She smiled again.
"Knock louder, then."
A rumbling sound of an engine came from outside the cottage, then the sound stuttered. A few seconds later there was a heavy thud against the front door and the rumbling drove away. Cormac peered out the window, thinking an annoyed, "What now?" Branna had said word was spreading about his unconventional partnership, but none of the she would come here, would they? The last thing he needed was a Lannon on his doorstep. An angry Lannon was not to be underestimated. Fortunately, there was no one outside, at least as far as he could see from the window. Before he could move to the door and get a better view, the landline rang from the other room. Cormac walked swiftly into the bedroom to answer it. "Hello?"
Hey,
said a male voice on the other end.
"Who is this?"
"This is Riley from the rental office. I don't mean to gross you out, but I just took out the trash and noticed that some kind of dead animal has been deposited.